I missed the story because I was on the phone. What happened?
So I've almost been eaten twice in like the last week. One time a dog just came out from under a patio, and like I walked up and I heard the dog barking, but it had like the muffled sound that I was like,
it's probably in the backyard. Or
yeah,
something.
I thought it was inside. Like the door's probably the window's probably slightly open, and that's why I can hear it so much. No, that dog was just under the porch, and he was, you know, very unhappy with me coming near his porch.
Yeah.
But he politely he waited until I put the package down and took the picture to come rushing up out of me.
Yeah.
Out of you.
Out of me. I think.
My inner dog protecting me.
That's right.
Inside you are two male dogs,
and they are very pissed. No, and so he almost got me. But what was really annoying is I got past a gate, like the gate shut, and I'm like, okay, I'm cool. And then I'm like, oh wait, it didn't latch. And at the exact same time that I was like, oh wait, it didn't latch, the dog was like, oh wait, this door isn't latched. And like he pushed it so that it opened up and came out at me. And that time it got to build up some momentum, so it was like coming at me fast, and I was not sure if it was gonna bite or not. But the even less fun one was a guy thought that I was someone that lived at his house pulling up, not someone who was coming to deliver. And so he opened the door and let all of his dogs out. And there were about five of them, and like three of them, not a big deal. Tiny dogs, I can handle that. Like even if I get nipped on my toe, that's not a big deal. But two of them were very large and very unhappy with me. And
you've doomed me, sir.
It's a good thing that I have the dog handling skills that I do, because I kind of know what to do in those situations from experience. But that was not fun.
What did you end up doing?
Stuck his fist down one of their throats.
Yeah, exactly. I kicked it in the ass.
He rolled over on his back and showed the dogs his neck.
I'm not a threat.
No, what you want to do with dogs is, as much as possible, you want to...
As much as possible, kick. Just kick, kick, kick.
Not really. You don't really want to be aggressive. That can make them back off a bit, but it also can put you off your balance. What you really want to do is the exact opposite of what your instincts are telling you to do, which is hold your ground, stare them in the eye, and move slowly backwards. You don't want to ever run away from a dog, because that triggers their predator instincts, and they'll come after you and nip at you. But if you're facing them, they think, oh, he's still a threat, and he might hurt me, so I need to like back off and try to make him break and run.
Mm-hmm.
So just back up slowly, get into the car, and shut the door.
It's like that. Have you guys seen that video of the dude who accidentally walks up on a mother puma and her children, and she gets into the "I must defend my children" stance and starts like coming at him?
Yeah,
and he's just like, "No, no, fuck off, go away, no!"
Yeah,
like, throwing rocks, but the entire time he's facing her and just like backing down the trail, like go away.
That's exactly what it is. You want to make sure that you are still a threat to them, because they don't want to fight necessarily. They want a fight that they can automatically win with no losses. Because
people forget that animals like
have a thought process.
Don't have doctors. And so for the most part, animals are like fighting is often, if they're not hunting you, it's often like a last ditch effort. Because they would much rather get away safely with zero wounds than kill you, but potentially take some wounds.
Exactly.
And now they've, you know, got little mountain lion gangrene because he can't go get a tetanus shot or whatever.
Exactly. Which is why packs of dogs, or even just two dogs, is infinitely scarier to me than one dog, because it is a lot harder to continue to face multiple dogs than it is to face one dog. If it's just one dog, I can pretty much deal with it unless they are just extremely aggressive. But if it's multiple dogs, then I am concerned.
Question for you.
Yes.
What if they're alien dogs? But you don't know they're alien dogs.
Oh, well, then I'll obviously go to the Arctic and then, you know, die.
Well, you're already there, and you're already dead.
Oh, shit.
Hi, my name is Josh. I'm an analyst here in Nashville, and I get mad and throw my coffee at a computer.
It's whiskey, actually, but, you know, either way. I'm Rick Fox. I am an author here in Nashville, and you gotta be fucking kidding me.
I'm Brian. I'm an illustrator here in Nashville, and I might drink poison.
I'm Caleb. I'm an analyst here in Nashville, and I am the ultimate alien terror.
And we're opinionated.
And today we're doing something a little different. I think this might be the first time we rewatch a movie that we've seen before. Have we done any of these before?
I'm pretty sure we've done a second
opinion. Twice already.
I'm pretty sure we've done a second opinions before. I think it was only released on the Patreon, maybe, though. Something like that.
Maybe? I'm not sure.
No, what it was is we talked about doing it with Wonder Woman and never got around to it.
Exactly. So this is the first time that we're doing a second opinion on a movie. And it's because this is Kurt Russell month, and Caleb had not seen this movie. Tonight we're watching The Thing, The Thing came out in 1982. It was written and directed by John Carpenter, and it stars... It was written by Bill Lancaster and directed by John Carpenter. It has an 86 on Rotten Tomatoes, and it stars Kurt Russell, Wilford Brimley, Keith David, Richard Masser, T.K. Carter, and many others.
A research team in Antarctica is hunted by a shape-shifting alien that assumes the appearance of its victims.
This movie's great, and we're watching it because it's Caleb's pick. He's never seen this, and I think the last time that we watched this movie, it was with like a totally... It was with a previous version of the podcast where, you know, Chris has left, Benj has left, like... We're a new crew now, and so I feel like it's high time we watch it again, especially given it fits perfectly into Kurt Russell month.
If there's a movie to rewatch, like this is one of the ones that we've done that I'm like, yeah, we can rewatch this.
Exactly. Caleb, you said you've never seen this. Do you know anything about it?
No. I've heard people reference it as a film, just the name of it, on many different occasions, but I know nothing about its contents.
I'm kind of mad that I read the summary now because that kind of gives away a little bit of it. The poster on
IMDb gives away just about as much as that.
I love the poster that it has because if it's the one that I'm thinking of, it has one of the worst taglines I've ever heard, which is, man is the safest place to hide. Man is the warmest place to hide. And that's like, that's like the tagline for the gay porn trailer of this movie.
The Thing in my ass.
Do you think that's how it gets in?
Yeah.
How do you think it gets in? It could go in through the ass.
That could probably go in however it wants.
Maybe it's through the penis.
Ah, that's somehow even worse. No.
It's like that little Amazonian fish or whatever.
No, right. Not the Kandiru.
Is that what it's called?
Kandiru fish.
Gross. Mm-hmm. I will say that this, and would you consider this a horror movie?
Oh, yeah, 1,000%. Yeah.
Josh, I feel like you are the ultimate litmus test for that since you hate horror movies.
I do. This was the first horror movie that I enjoyed, the first horror movie that I wanted to watch again, and honestly, the first horror movie that made me say, okay, maybe there's something else to this genre that I've written off entirely. And so since watching The Thing, there have been other horror movies where, you know, I can still say I don't like being scared, I don't like the genre as a whole, but I'm more willing to
experience
something and try and give it a fair shake as opposed to writing things. You know, there's some things that I will just write off at face value and be like, no, screw you, I'm not watching it. Right. But I'm more willing to give the movie a try because of this movie. Because this is just it's a great job of balancing suspense with not suspense.
With oh fuck.
Well, right, like there's the like scary moments, there's the suspenseful moments, and then there's plenty of the other moments throughout the movie that balances it out. And I love the way that this movie ends, and I don't want to give anything away to you because I think it's great to experience yourself, but I really enjoy this movie and I'm really looking forward to watching it again.
All right.
Brian, how about you?
I think I really enjoy this movie. It's been a long time since I've seen it, but I like the mythos of the world, or what, like, I like thinking about what
the
could
implications
happen.
Are.
Yeah,
sure.
I want to know more about this world,
Which is just Earth, but you mean the aliens?
Yeah, the
monster.
Which the hidden under the arch.
You say that, but just so you know, there are comics that extend past this movie.
Yeah, I've heard
they're terrible. Just the worst.
It's unfortunate.
So like, I also would like more set in this universe, but that's done. That stuff's not in.
It's kind of like how I really wish they'd make a Matrix sequel.
Exactly. Man, like that.
Maybe one day they will.
Maybe some Star Wars sequels. That'd be great too.
Or prequels.
Oh man, you could do so many cool things with the prequels of Star Wars.
Or maybe Matrix prequels. What would that be like? The life of Morpheus.
Actually, the
Matrix prequels is just like normal life, and they haven't invented the Matrix yet. Like,
to be fair, there is the Animatrix, and that's got some Matrix prequels in it that are pretty good.
Yeah. Is there a different series that could be described as the Matrix prequels?
Terminator?
Not really.
Like, let's just say that the Matrix further past.
You could say that because like the machine uprising is like basically most of the information that you have for that. So maybe like post that war.
Yeah, like it's a couple generations past Judgment Day.
Okay.
Because the first generation past Judgment Day is like the we're sending folks back in time to try and prevent it, and then even later it's like, well, shit, that doesn't work because turns out machines can do that too. So what if we cancel off the sun?
There you go. Yeah.
The thing that machines notoriously need to live.
Exactly, exactly.
Well, all of this conversation has nothing to do with what we're going to watch.
At all.
So let's go in and watch The Thing. But before we do, Rick has released his book, Fate's Pawn, on Amazon in paperback and e-reader form. Rick, how many things are in your book?
Just tons of things. Things for days.
So folks could read your book and read about some things?
Yeah, there's definitely things in there.
All right. Well, if you like things, read Rick's book. It's called Fate's Pawn. Additionally, if some of the things that you like are additional podcasts and getting the podcast early, you can check out our Patreon. That's patreon.com/opinionated. For as little as a buck a month, you get all sorts of bonus content, early access to our episodes, and bonus episodes like listener requests, first impressions, and even some tabletop gaming. So definitely go check those out. Again, that's patreon.com/opinionated. Guys, we're going to be back in just a minute after we finish watching The Thing.
12 men have just discovered something. For 100,000 years, it was buried in the snow and ice. Now it has found a place to live. Inside. Where no one can see it. Or hear it. Or feel it.
I know I'm human. Some of you are still human. This thing doesn't want to show itself. It wants to hide inside an imitation. It'll fight if it has to, but it's vulnerable out in the open. If it takes us over, then it has no more enemies. Nobody left to kill it. And then it's won.
You guys gotta listen to Gary! He can beat one of those things!
I gotta get a big yawn out of the way.
You can't do that.
That's kind of sus, man. Yawning?
Mm-hmm.
Only aliens yawn.
Millions of our listeners are gonna yawn in harmony with you now.
That's right, suckers. Enjoy getting sleepy on the drive to work.
Your yawn will perpetuate throughout the ages. In 100 years, when someone's listening to opinionated podcasts,
and a million different spots across the world, a shockwave will
that's right.
go forth.
Have you seen that test they did to where they had people separating and rooms where they could not see or hear each other and yawn, and the other people would yawn too?
That are you serious?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's a spiritual yawn.
I can't see through walls, but somehow I know if someone's yawning in the next room.
Yeah.
I don't know.
We all have this shitty superpower.
I've got very low-key Wi-Fi.
You mentioned that my yawn would carry on throughout time, and I'm just thinking that, man, like, when society eventually goes to shit and we, like...
Eventually.
And then, beyond where we're at, where, like, the nukes go off and, like, it resets everything.
Oh, you mean, like,
everything.
Mad Max gone to shit.
Yeah, exactly. And then
the Terminators rise. Judgment Day has come.
Yeah, Judgment Day happens, and then a couple hundred or, you know, however many years go on beyond that, like 1,000 years after that. Can you imagine what a nightmare archaeologists are going to have? Like, how many shitty-ass, like... pieces of media are they going to have to just going through the Twitter record alone? It's like, it's archaeology, it's my job. And like the new Indiana Jones is just some sad schlub. Like, I guess today I take a crack at the furry feet pics folder.
Jeez.
And we're not even like 100 years deep into cinema. Imagine how much worse it's going to be like 700 years from now when we're on Fast and the Furious 972.
Somehow, despite Armageddon, that franchise has not died and it carries on. It's the one true Fast and Furious becomes the new like
Bible.
I was gonna say the new like Greek pantheon, where like it's just something that, you know, every kid when they get to middle school, they're like, oh, this is cool. I can't wait to go like read more about Dominic Toretto.
back in the before times, before the mushroom bombs fell, before the time of the great cold, there was still
CG.
Family.
CG and AI have gotten so good that there aren't even humans in them anymore. It's just the machines are making them on their own.
Yeah, they have an algorithm to spit out a new movie every...
Oh, God.
I mean, they probably do like
every day. I thought we were talking about the future. Well, you guys are just talking about like... probably next year.
I mean, you're not wrong. They can bring back Orville Redenbacher. They can bring back some other
actor.
The fact that you made a joke about Orville Redenbacher, and when I get home, I'm going to start getting popcorn ads on TV. Like, that alone says to me that, you know, we're not far from movies just being AI and algorithm created. So, all right. Speaking of movies, Caleb, what did you think of Among Us, the movie?
Well, it was a little sus.
Yeah.
Yeah, in all honesty, it was really good.
It's really good.
The practical effects, like you had to rely on practical effects for just about everything.
Literally everything. There's nothing that's not practical in this movie.
And that's just amazing.
Yeah.
Like how they do that little crab guy.
That crab guy is amazing. That crab is one of the best effects in the entire movie.
And even like the sliding head before it falls off the body is slowly elongating. Yeah. How do you make all of those things happen just like you want them to?
You know you're puggy.
Mm-hmm. Or like the flailing tentacles like wriggling out of the dog.
Golly.
The one part where the practical effects fell flat for me was at the very end. When Kurt Russell,
like when the thing erupts out of the ground,
and it goes to stop motion because it has a different feel. They both have that feel of like by modern movie special effects standards. Like at no point am I like, oh man, it's a real creature. Mm-hmm. Like I know that it's, you know, oh look, they like did some really good like plastic and foam work thing, right? But when it gets to the claymation, that previously, my illusion wasn't broken.
Right.
I know that it's not real, but I'm still like entrenched in the movie. Mm-hmm. Like, ooh, oh man, the monster. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, the doc's trying to do chest compressions and the mouth opens up and eats him. And then this thing like splorches out. But somehow that's still different from at the very end. Like, at the very end, I was like, oh, look, someone like made little tiny claymation arms
and wiggling them around. It's because it's such a different style of animation. Like, if the entire movie had been done in claymation style, like all the times the monster showed up, I think that it wouldn't have broken the illusion. But because the claymation is so different from what we have seen through most of this movie, it stands out a lot more than it really should.
Right. It was just the piranha plant looking spiky head thing at the very end that took me out. The rest, I could, maybe it's obviously puppetry, but I could give it a pass. Mm-hmm. But the piranha plant, I was just like, that looks fake as hell.
Yeah.
For me, sometimes, like, it depends on each viewing, because sometimes when they're looking at that corpse that's got the two faces, sometimes I'm like, that looks super fake. Other times, I'm like, that's so gooey and gross, and, like, there's so much detail to the disgusting, like, different levels of horror on it. Like, the one face is, like, got this horrifying scream. The other face kind of almost looks like you could see a smile in what it's going on there. Like, there's so many different details in that it doesn't always work for me, but also sometimes I see new things, and it's just like,
well, and I think that's why the monster works for me. Like, physically, the monster. Because obviously, like, suspense-wise, you don't know who's the monster. It works great. But, like, the practical effects for the monster, I think, work for me. Because despite there being stuff like the piranha plant head, where you're like, all right, come on. Look, they made a piranha plant head. There's always something in the... Like, there's so much going on, and it's always so different from the last view you had of the monster. Like, it's not like... It's not like the alien from Aliens, right? Where it looks this way. And when you see it, like, oh, it's got this little chompy mouth and it's got this big spiky tail and whatever else, right? This monster has no consistent look throughout the movie other than being a gross thing.
I think for me, one of the things I noticed in this particular viewing is when it is kind of taking over all the dogs and is coming into that big giant monster thing. Yeah. There's a moment where like it's getting ready to open up and like erupt out a big pair of hands. But this was the first time I noticed a whole bunch of sets of eyes. embedded in its skin. And I don't know, like I had never seen that before. And something about that, it just like grossed me out more than it normally would have.
Well, and that's what I was going to say is that each unique like presentation of the monster has the kind of, has some element of like the cheesy, okay, look at all the big fake teeth they made, but also something that just kind of affects me viscerally.
Like
in the first, you know, they've gone to the Norwegian base and brought back what they don't know what it is, right? And it's like the two-faced
dude that I was talking about.
The faces themselves don't really do anything for me, but specifically the one eye, you keep expecting, like, if Scooby-Doo villains have taught me anything, at some point that eye is turning to look at me.
It's going to blink,
Yeah, and so that eye specifically and the grin that goes with it is very unsettling, even though the like the face itself looks kind of cheesy, right? But I still get suspense from it. It still like wigs me out because there's something icky there. With the dogs, like you were saying, there's the eyes everywhere. And that's one of the reasons it works so well is because... despite it being cheesy, there's always something that's going to like weird you out.
I think the other thing that makes this movie so effective is that the characters in it always make good decisions with the information they have.
Yeah.
Every decision they make, you, like, it might not be the decision that you would make in that situation, but there's hardly a situation where it's like, oh, that was incredibly dumb for you to do that particular thing.
With the exception of the splitting up.
With the exception of everyone constantly going off on their own.
Sure, I'll grant that. But I mean, like, when someone makes a decision to betray someone, it's never very like, oh, that was dumb. You shouldn't have betrayed this obviously character.
So let's give some specific examples, right? The first one that I think of is Blair. I don't know what his role is at the Antarctic station.
He seems to be like the head scientist to me. He's definitely the smart guy. Yeah. They all kind of look to for that.
Crunching numbers in front of a oddly intuitive computer.
Yeah. Right, right.
And the computer, then he loses his mind.
The computer of exposition for audience members in 1980s who can't quite follow this complicated plot.
Right. The computer of exposition for people who probably don't have a home computer yet and aren't really sure what they can or can't do.
Exactly. So,
but when Blair figures out what's going on, that the monster is imitating people,
right,
and that it could potentially spread and be a danger to the general population as a whole, the first thing he does is he goes and starts tearing up the vehicles so that this thing can't just be like, all right, well, I took over Kurt Russell, so see y'all later. I'm hopping in this helicopter, right? He goes and makes sure that can't happen. And to your point, it makes sense. But go ahead and like talk about some more of those betrayals, because there's quite a few that happen.
Well, one thing I wanted to talk about is not specifically the betrayals, but I was thinking about Blair in particular, and that's what I was just looking up just now.
Wilford Brimley.
Yeah, and his simulation that he has on his computer. And like the thing that it comes up with is like, okay, if one cell of this thing gets out of the camp, how long will it take to completely destroy the world? And it comes up with 27,000 hours, which I just looked up comes up to about 3 years. And I'm sitting here thinking, that's way too long. If this thing gets out, it's done in like maybe 6 months. Like that's the terror of this creature, is that like I feel like we as the audience understand how high the stakes are a lot quicker than the other characters do.
Oh, you brought something up though. The whole like, oh, if one cell escapes, it's gonna it's gonna kill everything, right? Kurt Russell makes a big dumb move. Because he knows this already, and he decides to blow one of them up with a stick of dynamite instead of burning
it. Those cells spread out.
Let's just create a fine mist of cells all over the camp.
Yeah. That's pretty fair.
My hat's off to Wilford Brimley, because he makes it basically impossible to escape that under any circumstances at that point. And that's really, if you are thinking exclusively about the survival of the human race, then you have to ensure that no one's going to get out. Mm-hmm. No one's going to survive, essentially.
Absolutely.
Because there's no way of guaranteeing that not one cell isn't going to get on somebody. The only hope is to just drown it in the Arctic. Let the cold do its business.
I think it's interesting that how certain characters come to the decision of, oh, wait, my life doesn't matter anymore. Mm-hmm. What options does having that on the table give me?
Yeah.
That's such a unique position to be in that it is automatically fascinating to me to just imagine, okay, my life is no, like, I don't have to worry anymore about continued survival. What does that give me in terms of what I can do now that I couldn't before? Oh, I can just burn down the entire complex that we live in.
Mm. Yeah.
Ugh.
I'm curious, when did Blair get infected?
I'm not sure.
I'm thinking it had to be, it looked like the dog might have separated when it was growing the arm, so maybe a part of it got out and got through the window in there with Blair.
Right. So
when Blair first got in there, he was fine.
The first question you kind of have to answer is, how much control does the alien have once it's taken over someone? If the alien has taken over you, do you behave like you normally would until something forces the alien to act? Or does the alien know and control all your actions up until that point? Because if it's a situation where the alien isn't trying to, for whatever reason, like maybe its biological program is such that it will run you as its forefront actions. Like whatever you would normally do is what it does until it is forced to act. If that's the case, then Blair could have been infected as early as like when he is fucking around with the corpse that is, you know, all mutated. Like there's a point where he like touches it with his pencil, and then later he touches that pencil to his mouth.
Yeah.
So like it's possible he gets infected then, and maybe it's just slow on him
because of how little he got in him at that time.
But it's also possible that like he doesn't get infected until after the noose scene, which the noose scene is so effective.
You know what? I don't think so. I think he was infected before they ever prisoned him up.
You think so?
Yeah, because thinking back to it now, because I was the way I was trying to figure it out, I was like, okay, so surely, you know, he's cutting off their escape route and everything because he doesn't want this thing to escape.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So he's got to be infected after they put, because they go and they stop, because the next thing he does is he goes and tears up the whole like computer room and everything that. And then I think back and I'm like, no, he's been building this. He's been building this spaceship, and he was using the parts from the chopper and from the like rovers to build it.
Yeah.
So him going and destroying that was never an act of like, I'm going to stop this thing from getting out there. He disguised it that way because he was using those parts. Because how else did those parts go?
I mean,
it's not like when they chained him up in the tool shed, there were a bunch of parts laying around.
My only issue with that is that is some serious 3D chess of there's a working helicopter that I could potentially use to escape this situation.
But
I'm going to early on destroy that.
Blair doesn't know how to do a
helicopter. If they can build a spaceship, they can fly a whirly machine.
He's got
no.
But you've also got to...
The whirly machine is a stick shift. The spaceship is an automatic.
You've got to decide if Wilford Brimley is...
Because I think it makes sense that if he's going for peace, if the whole reason he's tearing stuff up is to build his ship again, right?
True.
Then I think it makes sense because earlier on they were like, oh, we haven't seen Blair anywhere. Where is he? He's been gone for so long. Then the next time they see him, he's tearing up the chopper and the rovers.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, oh, he tore those things up. That's terrible. And then the next time you see him, he's tearing up the computers. So I think he was just doing the same thing. But now instead of needing like bulk materials, he's like, oh, I need some computer parts. Well, how am I going to dismantle everything?
See, I can't get on board with you there, because I think if he is destroying those computers, he knows that he isn't getting back into that room until at least he's killed everyone else. I think that the big question is how much do these individual things work together?
That's because something I was wondering too, because we never saw individual, like two of them look at each other and give a nod like we're both alien.
Exactly. Like because the movie hinges so much on individual things having an individual will to live and survive on their own,
they all make their own plan.
I think that's the big weakness of this creature, is that none of them are really working together. They're all kind of doing their own thing. Personally, I think that Blair is infected when he's having that conversation about like, let me back in, but you've got the noose in there. And I think what happened is he at some point realized that he was infected, tied the noose, and the thing took over and would not let him kill himself. That's my personal fan theory, because that to me is the most interesting scene that we don't see. And that's one thing that I love about this movie, is that you can consistently look at it and pull it apart and think of scenes that happened that you didn't get to see, but would have been fascinating to have on film.
Mm. All right, question then, because I think that's a fine theory, but going with mine, I then think that the underpants that are found in the kitchen trash are Blair's.
Yeah.
Because if it's not him and he doesn't transform until way later once he's about to kill himself with the noose, whose underpants are those?
My guess would be Norris's. I think Norris is
and again, which one is Norris?
Norris is the fat guy that has a heart attack and then later his chest opens up and eats the doctor's hands.
The character that didn't really matter very much.
Right. Personally, I think he is the first one infected, because the most likely candidate for the first infection would be Clark, who is the dog guy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but he's not.
And we're counting after Benj, right? Because bald orange beard is...
Well, we see bald orange beard get infected.
Right.
Like we see when that specifically happens. So someone else had to be infected before him.
No, because the dog came over and was nipping at him, remember?
Yeah, but
in the break room.
But we see him, like, he's the guy that has, like, a bunch of, like, the thing then, eating him.
Yeah.
And like, when Mundo sees it.
When they move the like Two-Face body into the storage room.
Right, we see that. That's when that thing. That's when he gets eaten. So
it
wouldn't
need to copy him if it already infected him in dog. That's fair. Body.
Right, true. And so Clark, we know he's never infected because he dies, and we see the test done on his blood. So he's never a thing. He's just a weirdo. Mm-hmm. And so to me, Clark is the most likely to be infected, but because he's not, it has to be someone else. And the one that we know of is infected earliest is either.
Who
Norris,
is the one who hated Windows?
Or it's Mac. Mac is the other, is the like conspiracy theorist. The aliens are real.
The pot smoker.
Okay. Exactly.
He's the weed head.
Exactly.
Of the movie.
We know that at some point he gets infected because we see his body. You know, he turns into one of the things at one point.
Right.
And so I think it's either got to be Norris or him that is infected first. But mm-hmm. I lean towards Norris, partly because I think the shadow that turns on the wall when we see the dog walk into somebody's room, it looks to me more like Norris than it looks like Windows. But on the other hand, I also just feel like Norris flies under the window for such a long time that it feels like it was getting the pressure built up on it more and more and more, and that's part of why it dies. And the other fascinating thing is, like, why did it decide to
play dead?
Well, either did it play dead,
or what, did it copy a guy who was already dying?
Exactly.
That's what
and
I
then
was thinking.
When he died, it had to figure out something to do. Like that's
it's
such
just
an
weird
open
to me
question.
That it can have, it can change its body so much to turn its stomach into a booby trap that it can't fix. Like heart failure.
Exactly. So you got a question. Is that a decision that it makes on its part, which it very well could be, because the situation that it escapes from is a deadly one potentially because of what Kurt Russell is doing with the dynamite at the time. But also it makes just as much sense if it's not a thing that it decided to do. That body just died, and then the thing that it was had to deal with what had happened then.
Yeah.
And because, like, if it had just died and they left it alone, fine, that's one thing, but that's not what happens. He goes in with the shock paddles, which could potentially attack it, and that's why it opens up and attacks him. There are just so many layers to the events that happen in this movie that you can peel back and analyze from different perspectives and go, okay, why did it make this decision? And there are many logical answers to
but
that question.
It doesn't, like, hold your hand. It lets you think about this.
Exactly. It never tells you what's going on, and I love that because I can watch this movie over and over again, and I can forget who gets taken when.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the massive strengths of the movie, is that you can, it gives it so much rewatch value that there is so much that happens off screen that you never know specifically, did this happen or did this happen? And because of that, it's always, you watch it and come away with maybe a slightly different interpretation of what could have transpired in different points of the movie.
Yeah, it doesn't hold your hand, and it leaves things ambiguous. And as a consequence, it gives it a lot of rewatchability, which is a hard feature to come by these days.
And oh God! This was the remake of an older one, right?
Yeah. So the original is it's a novella from the 20s.
Sure.
And then they made a movie of it, which is not very like the book at all.
Mm-hmm.
That particular interpretation is much more.
It's called 19, the thing from another world.
Yeah,
and it was made in 1951.
And it's very much a 1950s
so this
alien
been
movie.
Made three times.
Yeah,
four now, I think.
Well, I thought the newest movie was a that was about
because
that's the story I want to know too, but. They a better movie than that.
Yeah, the prequel is the story of what happened at the Norwegian base before those guys came and, like, were trying to shoot that dog and, and come at you. And it's not good, which is unfortunate because it has a lot of potential for that story, but it just doesn't work.
I want to know if any of them tried the peace path, like, hey, I'm an alien in this body now, but I'm smart enough to build spaceships. Maybe we can come to an understanding.
Right.
It's weird to me that as soon as any jig is up, it's just like, now I've got to be a nightmare.
Right, yeah.
It doesn't even say, like, no, I'm not the monster when it's the jig's up. It's just like, yeah, you call me. That's fair.
I think that's one of the fascinating things about it. Go ahead, Josh.
So I was looking up interviews with John Carpenter, and one of the things he said is that once a person's infected by the thing...
Mm-hmm.
That person no longer is. It's the thing is the only thing that remains. It is perfectly aware that it's the alien, but it has
it doesn't make the original host think it's still like
no, and it also doesn't like hide in the background of their subconscious while they go around and then it'll spring out. I wish you wouldn't have answered that. I would have liked that to have been in the air. And it has their memories and abilities, but it does. But there's no like if MacReady was actually the thing, he wouldn't be like, oh, well, I wonder if I am or if I'm not. Yeah. And that's one of the things he says is that if you're wondering if you're the thing, you're not infected.
That's what you're saying is the perfect imposter.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. That's interesting because I think that the novella that this is based on, which this is a pretty like it's very much different in terms of events, but in terms of like theme and the ideas behind it, I think that the novella and this are pretty good adaptations of each other.
It says that in the novella, the short story, The Things, is absolutely clear that the things know they are things.
Well, I don't know. I don't agree with that necessarily if that's what it says. Because, so in the novella, there's a specific individual who gets taken over, but no one knows that. And this guy is super religious. And so he just loses his mind and starts praying continuously, loudly all day. Yeah. And he's alone when he does this. And finally, someone can't take it anymore, snaps, kills the guy, and it turns into one of the alien monster things. Hmm. Like it, like dead on the ground, yeah. Like it's dying, but it still like tries to transform and become something else. And the only explanation that any of them can come to is that it didn't know it was a thing until it was killed, and yeah. That triggered the instance of that.
Yeah, the fight or flight kind
exactly,
of
because it wouldn't have gone insane. That wasn't a good survival mechanism for it. That was something lingering from the person that had. It had taken over.
Yeah, because that would be the best survival mechanism is just not to change at all, mm-hmm. Lay dormant in all the humans and wait for like the shift to change.
Exactly.
And bam.
The pandemic games thing where you like don't evolve any symptoms until you're like infected the entire human race, uh-huh. And then you just suddenly have like all of the worst ones, and you just kill everyone in like a week. Yeah, right. Exactly.
No, I'm pretty sure that because it came out in like. The 1940s or something, 30s or something like that. I'm pretty sure that was just like the only reason he survives is because, you know, the power of Jesus is keeping him from killing.
No, that guy dies. That's the one who gets killed. Is the yeah, super I know, religious
but,
one.
But the reason that the monster
it wasn't
can't
able
take
to take over because yeah. Of the Jesus Chlorian.
Exactly.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yep. Yeah, that's no, I don't get the impression from that story that's what that was.
Anyway, if, at least for this movie, the things yeah. Know they're the things, and it's not like Blair is at no point still Blair, and the thing is inside him just waiting to take over.
Sure, right? Sure.
So
you've all seen the poster for this movie, right?
Mm-hmm. With the
which
like,
one?
The backlit glowy one. Glowy, yeah,
I've seen that one.
What's that about? Because I love that poster. Is that just like? We only ever see him in pupa stage, but when he becomes perfect, he's just like an angel made of like light and
this
eyeballs.
This is actually
and shit.
The path to enlightenment.
Yeah, and we're just fucking it up, kind of thing. Like,
I don't know,
but I like the idea because it's just a dude in a parka, right? The poster is, and his face is like shining a super bright light. You can't see who it is.
Yeah, so it's like the idea, daylights or something.
Right, I like the idea that it's like. This is the alien, and it's a dude in a parka, which, of course, they all are.
Yeah, they're cold.
They're in an Antarctic research base, and you can't see the face. So, you like, who
could
is
be
it?
Anybody.
You don't. It's just. It's
could
just,
be you.
Yeah, who is it? You don't know the poster, right?
To me, it's sort of that combined with, like, the blinding light is, to me, sort of symbolic of the
gray unknown.
Well, the kind of like if once you're aware that this type of thing exists, I feel like a lot of people would go insane because if this type of thing exists at all anywhere,
yeah.
Then it's potentially possible that it could land just anywhere on Earth at any time. And so as soon as that happens, the only reason that anyone could theoretically go on with a normal life in this scenario is it's trapped in Antarctica where it can't get to the most population. But if it lands in Kansas... Like, we're all fucked. It's going to get on, like, a bird and or a rat and then get everywhere immediately, and it's done. Like, there's no...
Or we nuke it.
It's, well, even then, like, does it get out of that situation? Like, can it burrow underground or something? Can it survive just long enough to latch onto someone who comes to explore?
It can survive cold, but it's weak to heat, and so all the heat from the nuke would kill it.
That'd be interesting.
You know. Yeah. But to me, like, by the time that you're aware that something has happened, if it lands in Kansas... It's already too late. It could be literally all over the planet, and you would never know.
I feel like as humans, we're really good at ignoring danger such as that, whether it be the reality of getting into a plane crash or a car crash and dying just because you stepped out your door, or the fact that there could be cosmic radiation in large quantities that could wipe out all life on the planet any second.
Sure.
And yet we are just like, you know what? Screw it. I cannot quantify this level of danger to my existence, so I'm just going to go on ignoring it.
Yeah, I think pretend like it doesn't exist.
I think that's the specific difference between the danger that is presented in the thing versus what you're talking about. Like, we have no idea what the odds are that a radiation wave would come through and destroy all life as we know it. Like, there's no way of knowing.
But we do know the odds that this thing takes over the whole world. It's 75%.
No, that was the 75% was for if people in camp were already infected.
Exactly.
Oh, that's right.
And I think once this thing gets on the mainland, it's game over immediately.
Wait.
Why did all computers in the 80s have, like, the mother computer from Alien where you could just ask any questions like, oh, I fucking know that?
Because it was an easy crutch for filmmakers who knew that their audience didn't know what computers did yet.
Yeah. Guys, hold on. What if, stick with me here.
Yeah.
What if, so, you know, it was only 75% chance that someone in the camp was infected, right?
Mm-hmm.
What if no one in the camp was infected? That's just what Blair's insides look like.
Oh. That's definitely, it's an interesting
interpretation.
Anyone
thrown that fan theory out yet?
It was a gas leak. Yeah. An Arctic gas leak.
That's right. Caleb, what did you think of the ending? And I'm asking these questions at you because this is your first time viewing.
I like dark and gritty films. Mm-hmm. So the fact that it's basically game over, everybody loses, but at least we got the monster.
Maybe.
That is the impression they at least give at first glance. And I like that quite a bit.
Because at the very end, Kurt Russell has been chased by this like amalgam monster where they've like fused together and they're chasing him and he's like, fuck you too. And he throws a stick of dynamite at it and it triggers a chain reaction of all the dynamite that's been set up and blows up the camp. And he's walking around kind of dazed. The camp is destroyed. It's about to get to like 100 below freezing, he said. And then he runs into Childs. And Childs is the person with whom he's had the most headbutting throughout the movie.
Yeah.
They're kind of the two alpha males of the camp. And
it does definitely feel like if MacReady hadn't been there, Childs would have been the one to take over.
Yeah. And also,
but you have two head chefs and that doesn't work.
Childs was in charge of guarding the door when they went to go do the blood test on Blair because they knew that everyone was safe. No one had been, they did the blood test. Everyone was good. And then Childs abandoned his post, and then Blair got out and started mucking about, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of shady. It's like, what the heck? Where you been? Where you been, Childs?
You're looking kind of sus.
You're looking kind of sus. Where have you been this whole time?
Right.
And also, like, I'm glad that you avoided all of the base explosions I just did, I guess. and his excuse is, I thought I saw Blair, and so I went out, and then I got lost. And I came back.
I mean, you can't get lost in those storms.
It's true.
It would be extremely easy.
A giant fireball in the sky is a pretty good sign to follow to get back.
Exactly.
True.
Yeah.
At the same time, we have no idea where he's been, if he found Blair and then escaped afterwards.
Plus, if he was the alien, he could just chill in the ice and be like, I'm going to sleep here until they come and find me. I can wait 100,000 years.
Yeah, exactly. And that may be why he's like, all right, I'm not going to fight this MacReady guy. Mm-hmm. He has been the most crafty of all of my opponents thus far. Maybe if I just like let us both die, I don't have to deal with him. And then someone's going to come find us and we're good.
That's also what, like, can they tell when each other are things? They know a thing is always a thing, like...
There was the nodding at each other, although I miss when that happened.
That doesn't happen is the thing. Doesn't. Yeah. And I think that for my money, they can't tell.
Yeah.
And they can't risk revealing themselves, so they never do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's my personal interpretation. But I think
it seems like the fact that Childs wanders away like that must have been intentional on the storyteller's part.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's far too easy just for him to have shown up in the climax and die with all the others.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I completely agree with that. Like, I think that the decision-making is logical, and I think it's reasonable that he wouldn't be able to find his way back until the fireball, specifically because all of the lights immediately were shut out.
Oh, like, that's a good point.
And so, other than maybe the emergency lights, which are not very bright, which you could very easily miss... I think that it is entirely reasonable for him to have come out there. Personally, I really like the fan theory that Brian kind of mentioned at the end of the thing of like, so one of the things that, that MacReady is using to set up his dynamite trap at the end are these bottles with kerosene in them. Mm-hmm. And he's been drinking this Jim Beam the entire movie, essentially. Mm. But he gives Child a drink of it at the end. And the fan theory is that he's actually like just taking a drink of kerosene himself, then giving it to Child to drink to see if he would react.
Yeah.
Man, that tastes like kerosene.
Exactly. Like, and so he's, and the reason that he kind of chuckles to himself at the end there is that he knows that Child's is a thing.
Yeah.
And so, like, maybe he at the end of it, like, has one last ditch play that we never see, or maybe he doesn't.
Like a dynamite or something.
Or maybe he just dies. Like, maybe he just gives up and that, like, he knows who's won, but he just decides, okay, I can't do anything else. I've played my hand. But I think what I love the most about that entire scenario is the way that we're introduced to MacReady. The first thing that we see him do is he is playing a chess game with a computer. Yeah. And when the computer gets him into a no-win scenario, he says, just basically, fuck you, opens up the computer and pours his drink into it and blows the computer up.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that, to me, tells you so much about how MacReady will play the game that he's got going on between him and this monster, because he's so competitive, he doesn't want to lose, that he will, you know, basically blow screw himself.
Yeah. And that has to be intentional.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
What else is he going to do? Like, watch the Wheel of Fortune for the 700th time?
Exactly.
On
video? Steal
Why
Child's
would you bring a copy of fucking a game show?
Three Doors or whatever?
I'm guessing they just have like tons and tons of those tapes, so they can just watch as much as they want and get high.
I guess. I would have brought not that. Like,
I'm sure it's not the only thing they have.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, they had some, like, they, because you're not going to get TV reception down there, right?
But, would not bring game shows. I would bring something that I would be able to watch more than once.
Right. Movies, whatever else. Yeah. So, and every time I see this movie, I think I've got the ending figured out. Mm-hmm. Because, and then there's like one
little,
like,
niggling detail
of a,
that
half
you're like,
of a second detail that it like burns my theory to the ground and it pisses me off. But when you watch that final scene and Kurt Russell comes up, he's breathing heavy, he's got frost all over his beard, and
Childs doesn't look cold at all.
They, you know,
well, he does have a little bit of frost.
No, hold on.
He's got
Childs.
I agree.
Childs has sweat on him. He mentions that the camp's getting real hot, and then Kurt Russell mentions that but it's going to get real cold.
Yeah, it won't last very long.
So it's like, okay, Childs is worried about it being hot. Kurt Russell's worried about it being cold.
Mm-hmm.
Then when they're sitting down next to each other, every time it cuts over to Kurt Russell, every time he breathes, you just get that, like, that big steam.
I remember
his mouth,
that
and it's
theory.
Tons
That's
of it.
Another one. Yeah.
And then when you cut over to Childs, there's nothing. Mm-hmm. Right.
He didn't,
and
just run
back
from
and
a
forth,
giant mosque.
Back and forth, back and forth. Mm. And then, but there's one, like, you see like the faintest puff, right, from Childs.
Yeah.
And I'm like, is that like they just left it on accident because it wasn't supposed to be there? Because it seems crazy how much steam you see coming out of Kurt Russell's mouth. It's like constant.
He just
and then
ran
every time,
from an explosion.
It's cold. That's the issue, is that it's cold. And he's coming, and then there's Childs who's sweating instead of like getting all frosty.
Right, right.
And he's not. And so I don't know. That's always the like, oh, I figured it out. Yeah, it's doing it. And then I always see that one little tiny puff of steam.
Yeah.
Childs was like, damn you, filmmakers, leave that out.
Maybe the thing like noticed, like, oh shit, I need to be breathing.
I was just gonna say
super
that
cold.
It was like, because it thrives in the cold, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's
it doesn't thrive. It just doesn't die.
But it hates the heat, and it can survive just fine out in the Arctic cold.
Sure.
And so my theory was always just that it's worried about the heat. That's the first thing that Child says, is that, oh, it's heating up out here.
Yeah.
And then, like, it just, the air inside of his fake lungs aren't, like, is already too cold to produce the steam, because that's it. It just thrives on being cold, right?
Right, right.
So,
well, there's a big difference between it being hot, like it is in Tennessee right now, and fire.
Yeah.
Fire.
Which is hundreds to thousands of degrees.
Yeah. It may feel a lot like being on fire when you walk outside sometimes in Tennessee in the summer, but you're not actually, and you need like actual fire to burn the cells of this thing. I really like that. So at one point they visit the Norwegians' camp, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, before you go into that, lead in with the intro, because I love this intro because it seems so out of place. And then about 10 minutes later, the movie contextualizes it and it's like, oh, that's actually like a really cool scene.
Yeah.
So lead us in with this opening.
I pretty consistently forget the opening happens in the movie.
Me too.
Yeah, it caught me off guard because...
So tell us what happens.
There's this dog galloping across the surface and you can't... of the surface of the Arctic, so there's just snow everywhere. And you can't tell, is this a wolf or is it a husky? There's a guy in a helicopter that's just trying to catch up with it. And despite shooting bullets and bullets at it, he just can't get any purchase on it.
And hand grenades.
Yeah, eventually he's throwing bombs at this dog. And I'm just scratching my head like, what the hell is going on here?
You're like, why are they trying to kill this dog?
This guy is a terrible shot and he is trying way too hard. This doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he was like one of those Liam Neeson wolf hunters, like out here on these oil rigs in Antarctica. Wolves are the number one predator of humans, so we gotta take care of them.
I still have never seen that movie, but all I can remember from it is like the broken glass gloves that he's got going on.
That is a terrible movie.
I've heard that, and so I never want to see it because that image of like Liam Neeson staring down a pack of wild dogs and he's got broken glass gloves ready to just go hand to hand with them.
Clearly,
would
have
so
taken
badass.
Like 15 minutes to put that, and the wolves are just like. Let him get his claws on.
Right, right, yeah.
Let's see how this plays out. I want to see what he's got.
So the dog runs into their camp in the helicopter.
The Americans' camp.
Correct.
Yeah.
And the Norwegian helicopter lands at the edge of it, and the dog runs into one of the guy's arms. And despite that, the Norwegian comes out with a sniper rifle still in hand, yelling this or that. You can't tell.
Because it's frantic. It's in Norwegian.
The subtitles just say, speaks in Norwegian.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And he starts spraying bullets continuously at the dog, and the guy holding it hits him, and he's not backing down at all. And they take one of the guys, the sheriff, breaks a window in Western style.
One shot, one kill, takes the guy out.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, what the hell is going on? This doesn't make any sense.
Uh-huh.
And yet, after about 15 minutes, I was just like, oh, shit. Mm-hmm. Oh. Because that dog's been all over that camp right now. He knew what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
It's a
fantastic intro.
Yeah.
The moment you become aware of what that dog is, you realize how fucked they are.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, and it's not like...
And you retroactively root for the Norwegians. Mm-hmm. You're like...
Yeah.
Like, I know they're already dead, but no, you were so close to killing it.
Uh-huh, exactly. And so when you were initially talking about the intro like that leads into the movie, I thought you were talking about the very first thing we see, which is a spaceship coming through space, crashing.
I completely forgot that ever
showed. I forget about that every time.
Almost every time. I forget that that's there. And it gives away so much of the game, but it just doesn't stay, like it doesn't overstay its welcome.
Yeah.
And so by the time the movie's starting, you're just kind of like, okay, yeah, whatever, that happened, and I've completely forgot about it again, and we'll only remember the next time that I see this movie.
I still wish they'd done that different. I still wish it had been like, you just see like a comet streaking by.
Sure.
Yeah. Later on when they're like unearthing, they see the Norwegian pictures of them doing their ice capades, and it's like, whoa, UFO under the ice the whole time.
That's part of why I like that, was that you think that it's a recent UFO, and then you figure out it's been there for 100,000 years, and that just like speaks to how tough the alien is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But the Norwegian's camp, when you get to see it with MacReady and Doc and Gary, oh, it's amazing. What it actually is that's their camp at the end of the movie after they burnt it down.
Whoa.
Yeah, and I love
like
that.
Filmmaking-wise, that's how they made it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's cool. They burnt their own place down. But just there are so many still images in that camp that tell their own story just by themselves.
Like, there's far too much in the cinema of telling rather than showing, and I prefer showing to telling,
right?
But they almost fall off the ditch on this other side of the road because they tell you nothing, and they paint this beautiful picture of what they show you.
Exactly, and that's to me why the prequel that shows all this fails, is because the answers that they come up for what happened in there. Like, you can never... one of the storytelling ideas is that you want to often give the audience the ability to tell their own story in their own head. Exactly, because whatever they fill in will be personalized to them, so you can never really top that. And I feel like the big failing of that movie is that it...
Of the prequel.
Of the prequel
was eventually made for this.
Yeah. Exactly. Is that it answers so many of those questions, and then it's just like, oh, okay, I guess that's how it happened. And it's not as interesting. Also, the effects just don't work because they're not practical, which is heartbreaking because they had practical effects in that movie and then they painted over it with CGI, and it's just a complete failure. Yeah. But that
I like that, like, one of the first things you see is as they're going into the Norwegian camp and they're like actually getting into the buildings, right? you see that the door to the lab is locked and there's a bloody axe embedded
yeah.
in it.
Yeah.
Right.
And my first time watching this, I was like, oh man, they must have been like trying to get in there to kill that thing. But then when I watched it this time, I was like, no, wait, when they actually break down that door and they get in there, who's inside? The person mm-hmm. that's inside is a scientist who has committed suicide. He's slit his own throat.
Right.
Supposedly. He just works out like every day, and he's like, if I'm going to die, I'm going to nearly cut off my head.
This man doesn't just cut a couple veins. This man, like, cuts through his right. neck.
I everything mean, except for off. The spine.
And but
not only that, but he's also sliced so much of his arms mm-hmm. yeah, that,
the
like,
veins are just hanging.
There's icicles. There's not blood fast sickles. Enough.
You have to, like, to me, this guy is so dead that you have to question whether or not he actually killed himself, despite the fact that the razor's still in his hand. Because if you had cut your arms to that degree, your hands would no longer work, and the last thing that he has to have done is somehow sawed through his entire neck.
I think it's just a little gratuitous maybe gratuitous it was, practical effects. I don't think it's supposed to be like sit here and think through the logic of how they of
maybe
how
it was like
Harakiri
where he had a second to make sure he finished right. the job.
But this movie is so good about giving you so much of that available logic that it forces me to kind of go like, well, maybe no, there is an explanation to this, and yeah. I just don't have all the pieces
I think
to puzzle
it's
out.
Just pure power of will.
It probably. Oh, you think that's what it is? He's just like, nah, I'm gonna get it all.
The Norwegians are hard.
Yeah. No, but I liked. Rewatching it this time, I like because I pieced those together and it recontextualized what that axe is doing in the mm-hmm. door. Because that axe is there because the
Something
thing,
was
the
to
thing
in.
Was trying to get in there and eat him,
mm-hmm.
and
oh,
that's
yeah.
why he killed himself. And mm-hmm. it's cool because I don't know. I get new things each time I watch this movie, and it's a lot of fun piecing the puzzle together because mm-hmm. like I've got the story right, but the devil's in the details, right? Yeah. And so like
the
being
actual
able
story
to,
is pretty simple.
Yeah,
it's all those details. It takes a lot of rewatching to put them together.
Exactly.
Evidently, this is my first time on.
right. But like, so this time I focused a lot on Clark, who is the guy who takes care of the dogs. He like really loves the dogs.
Mm-hmm. He's dog.
He's Brian if Brian was in a movie.
Sure.
And the thing that I really like about him is that they clearly knew what role he was going to play, and so they made him specifically to be a little bit off so that you would suspect him the entire movie because he is the guy who's around the dogs the most. Like, he's the most reasonable candidate for being a thing by a long shot. And I love that he is not, and he still dies making logical decisions. Like, his decision to try and take MacReady down when MacReady is clearly strung out, clearly, like, at the end of his own rope and, like, ready to kill all of them.
And they've found what we find out later is planted evidence that mm-hmm. he's actually... Because they find out the thing, like, bursts through your...
Clothes.
It's not a chest burster, but essentially, right?
Yeah, like,
so they
it
find
punches
your
holes in you. Yeah.
Yeah, they find the tattered clothes of whoever's the thing, right?
Right.
And someone has found MacReady's tattered clothes, so mm-hmm. they make the logical conclusion, oh, turns out he's one of the bad guys,
right.
when he's not actually.
Yeah.
And so it makes a lot of sense when Clark is like, well, he's holding us all hostage.
Better kill him.
And we saw the clothes. We know he's a bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to take my chance.
There's so many little details like that. And not all of them are that kind of thing. I really appreciate how long this movie lets normal life kind of linger in the base before things go crazy.
Yeah.
Because little details like the guy who got shot in by the Norwegian accidentally, him like yelling at the cook guy, Knowles, hey, turn down your music.
Yeah.
You know, and Knowles just was skating over to
goes
literally skating.
Like, nah,
and
too so, cool.
Exactly. Uh-huh. Like goes and maybe dials it back 1 degree.
I don't think he
maybe.
Ever touched
Rick,
it. I think that's probably what happened. But I like the way that he just kind of like, even if he doesn't, he kind of waves his hand in the general direction of it. And it's just so disrespectful that it makes me appreciate. I know instantly who that guy is.
Yeah. And Rick, their relationship.
He does what I do when your wife tells me to turn down the TV while we're watching these movies.
Glance at the remote and be like, okay.
No, I take the remote. I turn it up 2 notches first, and then I turn it down 2 notches. So it looks like I'm doing what she asked me to. And by that point, whatever line was being said in the movie is done, and so it sounds quieter anyway.
It's a good thing she doesn't listen to these podcasts.
Exactly.
And one more thing, since you brought up the early character development,
mm-hmm.
I like what they did in the scene where everyone's tied up and they're doing the blood checks. Because
it's so tense.
Yeah.
And the characters that they've established so far really matter in that scene.
Yeah.
It's not like it is in some movies where the moment that the big monster or shit starts going down, it's just a bloodbath until everyone's dead except for maybe one person.
Mm-hmm.
They're still building character even after it started.
Yeah, exactly.
And when you think about it, the only person who they're not doing that with is the person who it turns out is the monster, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Because the person who it turns out is the monster is, I forget his name.
Windows.
No, it's not Windows.
No, it's Blair.
It's not Blair. It's the wacky conspiracy theory
Mac.
Smoker.
That's Windows.
No, that's Mac.
Oh, it's either Windows or Mac. It's one of those two.
Because Mac hates Windows.
Yeah. Okay, Windows is the curly
Windows
guy.
Windows is curly-headed okay. radio operator.
Mac okay. bites right. yeah, Windows Mac. After he gets yeah.
okay. It is Mac.
Mac has been goofy.
Mac hates
he's
Windows.
Been he's been cutting up and making jokes the entire movie. He's always got some quip or some line. Except when they're tied up in those chairs, he's just kind of silent. And he, as they're going down the line, when the camera turns to him, he's just like, he kind of hangs
completely
his head
still.
Yeah. He's
yeah.
just
perfectly
like
still
turned
hangs
off
his head. Yeah.
Another detail that happened in another amazing scene. So Norris's head is coming off of his body after he's eaten the doctor's hands and all
sure.
that.
It's just so intense.
So there's a moment where nobody notices immediately, except there's this head that is like quietly scurrying away, trying to escape after having ripped itself off of Norris's body. And Mac is the one who turns to it and looks and he says my favorite line of the entire movie, which is, "You've got to be fucking kidding me," which you can very easily take as him, the thing, betraying the other thing to get everyone's confidence that he has, like, he's thrown his buddy under the bus. There are so many betrayals in this movie, and normally, like, when you've got a movie, a betrayal is such a, like, okay, someone's betrayed us, we're all done with that person, there's no going back from that. But in this movie, the situation is so extreme and trust is at such a low ebb that all of the betrayals, you kind of just are like, yeah, I get it, man, I get where you're coming from.
Not only that, the betrayals, you understand why. When the betrayals are done, because it's like, oh, like, I don't trust you, you might be the thing, I'm going to tie you up and hold you at flamethrower point. It's like, okay, yeah, I get it. But also, like, until we later talk about and find out that Blair is the villain, right? The betrayals that he's doing of, like, oh, I'm going to sabotage the base, I'm going to sabotage our computers and our vehicles.
Seem like the greater good.
It, also, the same thing. So it's like, it's on both sides, where it's, I'm doing the betrayals, but it's the selfless action of the hero, versus like, oh, I'm doing the betrayals, but it's the self-preservation as someone who's still a human, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And all of them are that way, even though half of them turn out to be monsters.
Right. I really think that you could dissect the scene where they're doing the blood test. Like, you could dissect that and you could make so many good horror movies with the principles that are worked through in that. Because, like, you've got the character aspects that we've talked about already. You've got the way that it escalates, because there's the entire time you're watching that scene, like, I know it works because I've seen this movie several times, but every time I'm watching that, there's so many tests where nothing happens that you always have this niggling thought in the back of your mind of, like, maybe this test doesn't work at all, and he's just wasting all of their time.
Or maybe he really is a monster.
Or that. Like, there are so many options there, but I think that this movie has done such an excellent job of building up to that scene and building up different tensions that go on that it is just incredibly impressive how well it all plays out. And I'm always just kind of sad that he does, like, finally find one, because it means the scene is pretty much over of, like, oh, okay, all that tension that you've built up so excellently is gone now. I know who the bad guy is. But at the same time, like, they have this gigantic action thing, and then I love the scene where, like, okay, they've killed everyone. Hard cut to MacReady is sitting there with the test ready to go for the last guy, and the other two guys are just sitting there like, waiting. Yeah. Like, we're ready
we're
to set you on
now.
Fire. Exactly. Yeah. And they were the two guys who had the biggest trouble with him.
Yeah.
One guy who tried to kill him, and Childs, who, as we've explained, has so much attention with him, and Gary is just sitting there in the chair like, all right, let's do this. And his final line of, like, you know, he's got this, like, he's been such a force of calm and steadiness through the entire movie. He's been so reasonable, even when the suspicion
like has
been on him.
He's like a retired sheriff or something.
Exactly. Like, when suspicion is on him, he's like, guys, I understand why you're freaked out at me. I'm going to give over the gun. I'm going to do it real quiet and you know, just easy. And then finally he's broken and he's like, yeah. I would like to not be tied to this fucking chair. And it's all of that just works so well and gives you that last moment of levity before we roll into the final, like, bleak ass climax of this movie. Right.
Question. Who cut the blood bags?
I think it's Norris. So there's no... So
remind me which one's Norris.
Norris is the fat...
Secondary doctor.
Fat heart attack guy.
How? He doesn't have the key.
So we know that Gary and Copper are not monsters, both of them, because we do the blood test on both of them. They're not it. I think that at some point Norris steals the key and just isn't caught.
He did say he could have gotten it swiped off of him, and then they got into a big argument.
Exactly. And so I think it's Norris because we know Norris is one of the things. And so it's either him or it's Mac. And I don't think it's Mac because I feel like Gary would be much more on his guard about Mac. But he clearly implicitly trusts Norris because he tries to make Norris the leader in that scene. So that's my theory, is that Norris did.
Or maybe the alien could just get in there with tentacly things or turn it into a key or whatever. And like,
I don't know.
Because he was already trying to set everyone else up with like the MacCready jacking and everything. Sure, I think it was just... It's accomplishing two things. It's making him not be caught, and it's making them not trust each other.
The big mistake to me is the fact that they tell them specifically what they're going to do. He should have just been like, I think I've come up with a test.
Yeah, everyone follow me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
All right, Rick, why don't you tell us what you think of the movie as a whole?
Oh, God.
Give us your final thoughts.
I think this is one of the greatest movies that's ever been made. When it comes to horror specifically, this has to be in contention for the best one made. There's other ones you can bring up. You can bring up Alien. I think that's up there. I think that there's certain, you know, slasher movies that are in there. Mm. But this one has to be in the conversation. And in many ways, I think that this is a perfect movie. Not because it doesn't have holes, but because it uses the holes that filmmaking necessitates to its advantage to a just incredible degree. It's obvious that I adore this movie. Coming up with my favorite scene, you could ask me any given day and I would come up with a different scene.
How about today?
Today we have talked about a lot of my favorite scenes. I gushed already about the test scene. There's a lot of really good ones in there. The one that I want to highlight and it's mainly because we didn't talk about it, is at one point the character that looks like Benj, he's a bald guy with a red beard.
Big red beard.
Yeah, exactly. He's taken over and he gets caught though by Windows, and they all rush out and catch him before he can fully turn into Benj.
The thing.
Yeah, well, not the thing, but he's trying to turn into a human, but. And you see him just like running around stumbling, and he stumbles into the snow, and everyone comes around him, and MacReady lights up this flare, and you look down on him, and the camera slowly pans down, and you've got his face there, and he's just staring with this blank face, and then you slowly see that his hands are these gigantic, long, like
foot-long claws.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it opens like its mouth.
It's the South African director, and he did the...
Cronenberg?
No, he did the movie about...
District 9, maybe?
District 9, yeah. It looks like the little, arm thing.
Oh, yeah, when he was getting fucked up.
Yeah. But he's got these huge claws, and he's just clearly not human. And then he opens his mouth, and the noise that comes out of this creature is one of the most haunting, eerie sounds I've ever heard in my
life. It's like when you were hearing an underground cave or something. It's just like otherworldly, not an animal.
And the part that makes it the eeriest to me is that after you hear it, whenever it's night and you hear the wind howling during these winter storms, you can't tell if that's just the wind from the storm or if you're hearing that again because some other person's now been infected by the thing.
Exactly. And there's a moment where, like, they've got it, they've burned it, they've killed it, but MacReady wants to kill all of it. And I love this moment of Gary is talking about, I've known this guy. I've known him for 10 years.
Yeah, he's my friend.
And MacReady's just like, we got to burn it. Mm-hmm. He's not like, I understand he was your friend. It's just, no, we have to burn this.
Yeah.
Like, there's no options here. And there's just a subtle realization on Gary's face in that is just so strong. I don't have a least favorite part of this movie. This movie is aces from top to bottom. If I'm going to give it anything, I think that there are a couple of instances of the practical effects not really working or the special effects not really working. But honestly, that is covered for me by a myriad of other perfections throughout the entire movie. It's so good. 5 out of 5. I think that's the second time I gave it 5 out of 5. If not, I'm going to go back and smack past Rick for not giving it a 5 out of 5. This movie's brilliant. Brian?
I mirror a lot of what you say. I don't think... I'm going to go least favorite part first because I have a lot more favorite than least favorite.
Sure.
Is when they're so... Like how they're all like the best examples of humanity. Like almost none of them give shit when it's like, we're not leaving here alive. We got to take care of this. They're just like, yeah, we get that.
Right, right.
I don't like that none of them have a beef with splitting up. Mm. Not one of them is like, you don't think that's kind of a bad idea?
Yeah.
It would be different if they came to the conclusion that we don't need to split up later, but none of them were ever like, even at the very end, McCree's like, okay, you put this over there, you put this over here. You get to die, I get to hang out over here.
I'm going to hang out in this lab by myself with just a single lamp on my back exposed to the whole room.
Yeah. Especially when at the end when they're laying all the dynamite and Knowles thinks that he sees the gun guy, sheriff, and he thinks he sees him getting dragged away. And he knows that there's this monster. And instead of saying, hey, MacReady, I think something got Sheriff, he's just like,
oh, that's weird.
I'm going to silently walk into the dark without mentioning anything.
I think early on it is much more understandable to me because I think there's a point when you are, okay, there's still like 8 or 9 of us and you would feel more safe by yourself than you would in that group.
Yes.
Even though objectively you are less safe with everyone around.
Especially with the line where more safe with MacReady goes, like, all right, I know at least some of you are human because if I was the last one, you'd all just attack and kill me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that you don't want to, like, you know that you're safe and you don't want to be the guy that goes off and gets trapped with two things.
Sure.
Yeah.
Right. So there's a little bit of logic there, but on the whole, I agree with you. It's pretty freaking dumb
there's
that
not
they
a
just
lot
go off
to,
solo all the time.
To have a problem with this movie. So that's my only thing is that with how quick they are to put their plans together, that's the one thing to where, like, if they're going to split up, like, always be facing each other.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, I can be more forgiving there at the end just because the exhaustion might have mounted and you know you're already not going to make it out and kind of surrender.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of circumstances up to this point where they definitely split up and they should not have.
Yeah. My favorite thing for this watching of it is probably the idea that they've gone through this cycle so many times. Like, it just happened here. It's probably going to happen with another group of people. It happened at the Norwegian base. And I feel like it was on the ship. Like, it was not the owner of the ship. It was on the ship, and the ship was like, we got to take this thing down with us.
Oh,
and they did.
Yeah, I can get on that.
And there's so many. It's similar to me for Dark Souls to where they let you figure out things on your own. That is the best part of this story, that they could take from the novella or the original movie and get this story out. It's really good. So, 5 out of 5 non-Cronenberg Cronenberg monsters.
Oh, shit. I just said 5 out of 5. 5 out of 5 ruined drawers.
Boo. Okay. All right, I'm going to go next so that Caleb, you can finish since this was A, your pick, and also B, your first viewing. Okay. I really enjoyed this movie. I get something new from it every time I watch it. My favorite part of this movie is there's a lot to pick from. I mean, we've all kind of gone around and gushed about different things that we've liked. I think just the way that it balances the suspense, the way that you think you might have figured it out, and then, oh, psych, no, you haven't.
Mm-hmm.
And also just the new details that I get each time I come back to it. I really enjoy those. Least favorite, there's also a few things I could pick from. There are definitely times when the special effects don't hold up and even don't seem as consistent of a quality as the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
It also bothers me that they go off on their own constantly.
Yeah.
But from this viewing, my least favorite part of the movie is absolutely watching them slice their thumbs when they have to take blood. There's such a better way. There's so many better ways of getting blood.
All the doctors are dead.
And it is way more effective filmmaking.
I need my thumb though.
Yeah. If I'm gonna be surviving, and there's other people here, if you guys and I are trying to survive a monster menace that has come to kill us, right? And I know that I might have to defend myself. I might have to fight this thing. I might have to wield weapons or build defenses. I am not going to take my opposable thumb, the thing that sets me apart from the rest of nature, right, as a superior being. I'm not going to take that and give it a nice big old slice across and use that to bleed out.
Deep into those thumbs too.
Yeah, I'm going to give myself a little cut on the arm or on the shoulder.
Own fingers, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
They used the same knife too.
And just wipe it off on their jeans like AIDS aren't a problem where we're going.
Meanwhile, we've talked about how if you have a single cell that you spread from the creature, you're done.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Come on. Shouldn't share needles. You shouldn't share scalpels when you're cutting yourself open to find if you're an alien.
Yeah.
I'm just putting that out there. So that is my least favorite part. A, because it's dumb. And B, because I just have a very visceral reaction to seeing someone slice themselves like that.
If this were a couple years ago, I would have passed out. I still can't look at it, but
there's so many better. Just cut yourself on the shoulder, man, or on the side of your arm. So much
on
better.
On your weenus.
Yeah, exactly. Perfect.
Cut off your weenus, make it a separate being, and then set it on fire.
Why can't you use hair if the whole thing is
right? Yeah,
a thing.
I don't know.
Because it's so much more effective to see them dig into their thumbs and it slice through this meat there and this blood just gush out.
Also, I'm going to throw it out there that if you're having to hold a Petri dish from across the room so the folks on the couch can see, since they're tied up and you're testing them, a little hair in there is probably not going to, they might not be able to see it.
Except for the bald guys, they had beards. I mean, they could have gotten a good lock of hair.
Imagine Kurt Russell's actually the thing, and he just right before he goes to test his own, just gives a little puff. Oh, look, nothing's happening, guys.
See, now I'm just imagining his entire beard separate beings and just all freaking out at once.
All little Russell faces.
Oh, no.
Oh, man.
Beard tentacles.
Uh-huh.
It's a great movie. I don't know what I gave it last time, but it's definitely a 5 out of 5. Zombie dogs. It's a lot of fun. I wish I could watch this with Sarah, honestly, but she can't watch movies where dogs die because she loves dogs too much. Mm-hmm. But
just have her just look away during that scene, explain
it's
what happened.
Such a big part of the movie.
And jump to the next scene.
Oh my gosh.
It's real bad.
Or just hold her down and be like, nope, you gotta watch it, baby.
I'm just gonna be like, honey, did you know that in the making of this movie, they dressed up a bunch of cats as huskies?
I mean, I don't think they actually hurt any dogs.
No, definitely.
No, I know. It doesn't matter, though. She doesn't like to see dogs get hurt, even if it's fictional.
We're just gonna have to trick her into watching it because I want to see her watch this movie.
5 out of 5. Caleb, what do you think?
I think that for the first time in a while, I can say that I am looking forward to watching a movie again.
Mm-hmm.
And there are not many films in the past many years, quite frankly, that have managed to hit chime that bell quite like this one has.
Yeah.
It's not perfect, however. With that being said, it's perhaps the best horror movie I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I can think of a better one.
Yes. I'm so happy anytime anyone has that reaction to this movie.
Right.
My least favorite part is probably the blood bags. It might be because I haven't had the luxury of seeing it multiple times and absorb more details, mm-hmm. but that particular component seems a bit weak to me just mm-hmm. because I don't really have any theories that are working as to what was going on there. And maybe the third or fourth time, that's the kind of stuff that you hook into and it keeps your attention. But for the moment, it seems like a plot hole to me.
Right.
Although I do agree with what you guys said as well. There's a lot to like about this movie with what they do with the Norwegians, the incredible practical effects, especially for the time, the ongoing character development. Mm-hmm. It's just great. So I think I'm going to say that it gets... What, have I said my favorite part? I said good parts. I haven't said a favorite.
What's your favorite?
And that is a really difficult thing for me to answer. Oh.
You got to pick one, buddy. You got to pick it. It doesn't have to be the best part of the movie. Just when you think back to it right now, what stands out is something you enjoyed.
I really like how viscerally disgusting they made this monster.
Yeah,
it was
gross.
Horrifying, and it was wet, and it was slimy, and it's flicking tentacles around, and it is disturbing.
Vomits acid over that dog.
That scene where the head pulls itself off of the body.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, I did not see that coming. It went from 0 to 60 real quick.
Yeah, it did. Jeez.
So, with all that being said, I am going to give it 5 out of 5 bundles of dynamite.
It's a perfect score. It's a perfect score from the Opinionated Podcast crew.
That's a rare, rare thing. I think the only other movie that comes to mind that I ever had that is Logan.
Logan's another one.
Oh, so there, good.
There's a few. We've had a few really good movies that we've watched. Normally, we watch shit.
But, yeah, we do.
But we occasionally get the opportunity to watch something fun. If you want to go listen to those episodes where we mostly review shit, but occasionally get a gem in the rough, go find more of our podcasts on our website, opinionatedpodcast.com. Additionally, we're on social media at OpinionCast on Twitter and Opinionated Podcast on Facebook. Feel free to reach out to us at our email address, opinionatedmoviereviews@gmail.com. We always love hearing from you guys, whether it's your thoughts on our episodes or suggestions for what we should watch in the future. If you get a chance, please leave us a rating on iTunes and follow us on Spotify. Between that and you sharing us with your friends is the best way we have of getting out to new listeners. We always appreciate you guys listening, and until next time,
we're opinionated.
Thanks for listening.